Welcome to the Improvement Series, Season 1. This is a limited series. The next series of podcasts are hosted by my dear friend, John Hazan, an executive coach at Atlas Coaching. Each episode explores a topic of personal development with an expert who shares their experience, learnings, and thoughts and perspectives. Thank you for choosing to listen to the Hokuso Conversation. We hope you enjoy this special series and follow us for some more.
I was astonished to read in the Kantar Health and Wellness Survey 2012 to 2019 that one in four of the general global population is likely to be suffering from poor mental health in any one year. This translates to nearly 2 billion people who could be suffering from mental health challenges worldwide. And the cost to businesses through absenteeism and presenteeism is staggering. According to research undertaken in 2021 by Mind Matters, poor mental health costs European employers between 378 and 469 billion euros each year. There can be no doubt that poor mental health severely impacts an individual's ability to thrive, both personally and professionally. And there is an all too obvious need to provide individuals and organizations with the means to support their mental well-being. One important way of doing this is to build a meaningful support network. My guest on this episode, Mike Pagan, believes in helping clients achieve what he refers to as positive mental wealth through building a hand-picked support network of friends, professionals, and confidants who can help you to unlock significant performance improvements. Mike has worked with entrepreneurs, small businesses, corporate board members, and professional sportsmen and women domestically and internationally to do just this. He is a coach, author of four books, and a non-executive director, and is the first to admit that his approach is not a standard one. He can be blunt, direct, honest, and open where necessary. His book, Mental Wealth, Unlock Your Potential, Enrich Your Life, is available for purchase now. We talked about the dangers of isolation and the difference between isolation and loneliness, how to build a great support network around you, and is your support network fit for purpose? We talked about finding your sanctuary. And finally, the need to have more fun and care for those around you. Mike, good morning. Delighted to see you. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
I'm very happy to be here and sort of I'm intrigued as to how this goes. I've been listening to some of your other episodes and you cover some good stuff here. I'm excited.
Well, we're excited to be talking about this topic. This is something that we are hearing more and more about in all fields, be it professional, personal. Mental health is something that surrounds us. I've just done a mental health first aid course and was amazed at the weight of information, the number of agencies that exist to support us. So when we talked before this recording about your area of expertise in mental wealth, I was particularly taken. I'm really looking forward to exploring this a little bit more. As a start for 10, I suppose, you talk in your book about what is mental wealth. You talk about the need to manage isolation through positive mental wealth, the goals of mental wealth, and the four core elements. So I thought this is as good a place as any to start, Mike. Can you tell us a little bit more about the main tenets of mental wealth?
Okay, it's clearly, as you've alluded to, it's a play on the language of mental health. But my remit and my target here is when we build a positive mental wealth balance, so call it a bank account, where we invest in our mental wealth, it puts us in a very much stronger position for when things do go up and down. And when we are isolated, one of the key challenges here is this word of isolation. When we are isolated, that prevents decision-making, prevents creativity, and prevents us taking action. And so when we get those things right, we're having the good people around us, the right support network, asking better questions of us, then when things hit the fan, and they will, we can ride that wave more effectively. And it's just understanding the difference between when we're isolated, the problems that occur, but when we're supported, then we can deal with stuff as it goes along. And for me, I'm not a mental health practitioner. I'm not a trained counsellor. I don't do that area. but I work with people or I pull people in who are trained in those areas because it's a very, very tough skill to manage and to work with. But it means, though, that when we've got people around us, be they practitioners in mental health or in self-care or in our support network, then we're able to step up. We're able to have, dare I say it, more fun.
It's very important.
Get this support network around us, correct. We have a lot more fun. We create opportunities. We make braver decisions. We have greater successes. It all happens as a result of having great people around us that are fit for purpose for us, for the way forward. And that's a key part. It's because life changes. We evolve, we transition, we move on, where everything goes on. The pandemic years, as they'll be known in the future, was a monumental pause for so many people, understanding what isolation was, because everybody's locked up in their flat, in their home and wherever else. Suddenly we know what's going on. All right, how do we reach out? How do we get the strength? Well, that's building the right people around us so that we can have better decision-making, better support, and who knows, maybe better questioning, which enables us to find different alternative and more creative answers to opportunities in front of us.
That really resonated with me, Mike, the piece around your support network. I attended a fascinating lecture around our nervous systems, and we are hardwired through evolution to work nervous system, to connect with people. We absolutely, it's a core need, belonging, call it what you will. Maslow's hierarchy of needs talks about belonging. We need to belong to tribes. We've done it throughout our kind of evolutionary history. So that really landed with me, Mike, that, you know, we shouldn't be trying to deal with these things in isolation. We should be trying to deal with the challenges of life with a team around us.
There's a reason why people are put in solitary confinement in prison as a punishment.
As a punishment. Yeah.
Because we're not designed. And there's a difference between isolation and loneliness, because you can be surrounded by 1,000 people and still be lonely.
Yes.
In the same way as you can be sitting in a one-bedroom flat on your own, feeling wonderful. So it varies for each individual. But isolation is a punishment historically. So whether you be an organization as a solopreneur or a global corporation surrounded by thousands of other colleagues and employees, you are still potentially isolated when it comes to making decisions, asking questions, showing vulnerability. Heaven forbid you actually have to ask for help. Well, asking for help is not a sign of weakness. It's what helps us evolve and develop. And if we're not evolving and developing, then we're going backwards.
Yeah. And I guess I really liked your point about it has to work for you as an individual. I guess when people hear this, they, some of it will land, some of it won't. Some are more sociably oriented than others. Have you seen kind of people adapt to this message differently when it comes to building your own support network? You know, what are different people do it differently, I'm guessing?
Whether you look at sort of the introvert versus extrovert scale and whether people are seeking out, an introvert will, in a large environment, be standing next to the exit, looking at their phone, trying to avoid eye contact, versus the extrovert who's standing in the middle with their arms in the air saying, look at me, I'm great. And I know I'm being flippant here at going for both extremes of those profiles. But at the end of the day, whether you're an introvert or an extrovert isn't the call. It's whether or not you've got the people around you that you are comfortable with, that you know have got your back. When life deals you a bad run, call that an illness or a bereavement or a challenge of sort of a client that goes pot that takes 40% of your turnover or whatever else it is. These things happen. And it's knowing that, okay, how do we rebound from that? How do we manage through that? And not waiting for a crisis before we build that network. Because that's the one, I will change my approach once I've got smoke-related cancer. I'm not going to give up smoking before that. That's, in hindsight, is a foolhardy way of looking at it. But it's the other side of it. Well, hold on a second. Are you saying we have to be purists in everything we do? No. But it's just that awareness. And people are asking better questions. I know my coach, for example, he's also a psychologist. So he knows I'm lying before I actually say something.
Dangerous. Dangerous relationship to have, Mike.
But I use the word lying intentionally there because it's not necessarily lying as in dishonest, fraudulent, whatever else. Don't swear on podcasts, but it's when you're giving yourself the BS. I know the algorithms track these things, and if you do swear, they get upset. So, but you know what I'm saying. And when you're kidding yourself, well, that's lying. And when you're lying to yourself that you're going to do something, you know full well you've got no intention of seeing it through. Who's going to hold you accountable for the fact that you're procrastinating on something you know you need to do, be that change jobs, get out of a relationship, find a new relationship, whatever it happens to be. All of these areas, we get those things. And if we're kidding ourselves, somebody needs to be asking better questions. And that's your mental wealth team, as I call it. That's the support network that you are open, honest, vulnerable, and real with, because they've got your back and you've got theirs. And
I like that. I wanted to unpack that a little bit more, Mike, around, I suppose everyone can instantly see the benefits of having a support network. But what I liked was your burrowing down a little bit more about this. You talk about an intentional creation of a support network. So you've alluded to that already about, you know, don't wait until the incident has happened, the proverbial has hit the fan, do it beforehand, and then you know who to go to when it does happen. But also, I was intrigued to know that, to read in your book about the different types of people in your support network. So they're not all the obvious stops of best friends and family. It goes beyond that into professionals. Is there an example you can give of someone that's built a great support network, and what did that consist of?
Well, the starting point I'd say to you here is that people need to establish who is in their support network today. Okay, so this is a simple challenge that for people listening in, just get a piece of paper and start writing down a list of names of people that have got your back, that are committed to in your support network that you believe. I'll carry on just talking over that for a moment, whilst I know certain people will have a piece of paper and they'll be doing this. But literally just writing down a list of names to the point my wife has the dentist is in this support network for her, because guaranteed 2 days before we go on holiday or before he goes on holiday, there'll be a crisis. So she doesn't quite have him on speed dial, but he's right there.
He's part of the network.
Totally. So now people will have written down a list of names. I now want you to score them 1 to 10, 1 being a low score, 10 being a high score. This is totally subjective. There's no science behind it. This is just your gut feel. So for you and me, John, we've known each other a number of months now. We're getting to know each other better. So we would probably score each other somewhere between a 5, 6, or a 7.
Right.
Yep. So a 1, 2, or a 3 is somebody you know. A 4 or 5 is an acquaintance. So if you don't turn up for a while and then 2 months later you turn up and you say, oh, where have you been, Mike? Well, I broke my leg. That's why I haven't been playing football. Yeah, it's that thing. They won't reach out in that time. 6s and 7s can be work colleagues, connections, best friends, people that you really just, you go to parties with regularly, you've known for 30, 40 years, if you're as young as I am, all of those things. However, the 6s and 7s are people that you would not open up to honesty, vulnerability, talk your inner sanctum, your financial queries and worries, your business opportunities, your sexuality, whatever it happens to be. Those are the ones that score 8, 9, and 10.
Right. Oh, interesting. So you've almost got like 3 layers or levels, shall we say, of friendship.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because you've got people
like,
who
so subjective.
They're acquaintances, people who are connections for a reason, people that are in your friendship group or in your professional network, or whatever. And then your inner sanctum, this mental wealth team. And there will be people clicking through and doing that. And some, before we started the recording, there was a lady last week, and she had what she referred to as an epiphany, because she realized that she had nobody scoring 8, 9, and 10 in her list.
Yeah.
She was brilliant at giving, brilliant at doing everything for everybody else, but nobody was looking out for her. And that's not a bad thing. It's a great thing, because she now understands, right, now I need to intentionally go and recruit the right people that are going to have my back, that are going to support me going forward. And that's where we sort of get into this development of the mental wealth team and knowing where to go to find those people that are fit for purpose for the way forward. And through the pandemic years, there are people before that were great for you, but 2 years on, you need the 3.0 version, the 4.0 version, these evolutions of people that we need for the way forward.
That's I really love that exercise for its simplicity, but also the all-important review. I'm a massive fan of that. That if we'd done that exercise age 25, I'm guessing for a lot of people, the names would be very different from when they come to do it again at 35, 45, 55, whatever. Because, you know, friendship, hopefully you have your, I know off the top of my head, if I were to do this exercise, my inner sanctum probably hasn't changed now for 20 years. But the other categories, the kind of acquaintances and connections categories would almost certainly have changed. So what a great exercise. I like it.
But some of your inner sanctum, are they fit for purpose for the way forward? So now that you're a multimillionaire and you've got material wealth and you're supporting 17 charities with the profits of your daily breathing, I kid. But the point is, it's are they fit for purpose for the way forward, or do we need a next version of that?
Yeah, I like that.
Are we going to get better advice? We're going to get challenged in a different way? Because as we get older, if we're fortunate enough to have children, then our children go from toddlers to teenagers to young adults. They challenge us in different ways. Our relationships evolve, change. Some end, some get created. So again, all of these things, it's moving forward through life by intentionally looking at the fit for purpose for the way forward, not the way it was.
And when you talk to that, Mike, something that pops into my head is an example of a very good friend of mine. He's ex-military as well, and is going through some seismic changes in his life. We've known each other since university days. And he's come to me recently and said, I'm going through this and I want your support, advice, encouragement, whatever it is. And he said an interesting thing. He said, I've got you for this. You are a friend that I will go to for this reason. I have another friend who I will go to for this reason, and so on and so forth. He's got maybe a handful of that inner sanctum, but each with slightly different roles to play. Whilst that might sound slightly calculating, is there something there about not everybody has to be there for the same reason? Can you have an inner sanctum?
Oh, totally. And you say the word calculated. I would change that slightly and say the word selfish. It's got to be right for you.
Got to be selfish.
And selfish is a bad word, but it's not. We have to build those people around us that are fit for purpose. So I know, for a classic example here, you think of blood. My sister would score me an 11 out of 10 in her support network.
Right.
She wouldn't get 8, 9 or 10 from me because I have other people that I seek out. So there's blood, and I love her dearly as my sister, but in that inner sanctum, she isn't. Whereas for her, I am. So it doesn't have to be a symbiotic relationship here. And it's knowing who are those right people that we build. And I talk about sort of four core areas where we recruit from. So you've got your self-care, you've got your coach, you've got your professional network, and then you've got your peer support or your mastermind groups. And we go through all of those four areas, and suddenly you can, over time, create 8 to 15 people that are part of your mental wealth team. So if you can imagine having 8 to 15 people who are scoring 8, 9s, and 10s, they're asking stimulating, challenging, provocative questions of you, of what you're doing. So in the example of self-care, I do weird, stupid weekend warrior nonsense. It's part of what I do. You're ex-military, so you probably go further and you stick a 25-kilo bag on your pack and go and climb up a mountain and yodel at the top of it, having skinned a rabbit and eaten it raw.
The perfect description of my weekend, Mike. Perfect.
Exactly. There you go. But it's knowing what we do that's good for our own reboot and rebuild. So things like sanctuaries. Where is somebody's sanctuary? I have always said I can't do meditation and mindfulness because I'm either too fidgety or I fall asleep. But I've always done activities. So my swimming, I do a lot of open water swimming. And so stroke after stroke becomes a repetitive activity, which is in turn becomes a sort of a mindfulness or a meditative approach. I get out of the water having been in there for 20 minutes, 2 hours, whatever it happens to be. And the clarity in my brain on things I've been looking at, or just the freshness and feeling. And because generally I am in the UK, so the water is a little bit cooler, you get out fresh as. But that works for me. That's part of my self-care. And then to enhance that further, we did a channel swim as a relay a number of years ago. I always use the quote, more people have climbed Everest than have swum the English Channel.
Yeah, it's a great start.
I've got bragging rights for life. But we built a team around us, and that was one that helped coach, train, develop, so that there was no chance of me being an absent dad that was going to drown in the middle of the English Channel or be the one who was going to cause the team to fail. So, okay, so that can be a metaphor in a coaching environment, but so what are those challenges that different people are doing in their self-care that they need support from others? It can be health and fitness. It can be diet and nutrition. It can be a sort of illness related or strengthening related. All of these areas, when we get the right people around us that help us proactively and preventatively develop, then suddenly we're able to achieve more because now my three children know that I'm fit for purpose for when they need me, rather than me being a broken bag of spanners in the corner that's just unable to support or do whatever else because I'm burned out, knackered, overwhelmed, and in a poor mental, physical state of mind.
Oh, absolutely. How can we be there for others if we're not there for ourselves? But it's interesting you talked about the need for different roles within your support network. And again, the sporting, we talk a lot about sports and the similarities of sports in this series. An episode recently with a sports psychologist who talked about challenge and support and the need for a team around, you know, every professional athlete has a team around them that does different things. You've got your physical coaching, you've got your mental coaching, you've got your nutrition, all sorts. And we're saying the same thing here. We treat ourselves in a similar fashion here. One thing that stuck, Mike, is there the role of challenge within your support network? Obviously, we accept they're there to support there. And like you said, they've got to be there for you. What about challenge? Can you expect challenge? And what's the role there in your support network?
There is the whole crux of it. If you don't empower other people to ask better questions of you that you're willing to ask yourself, then they're just friendships that you're sitting in the pub and you're talking nonsense over. That's why there's that demarcation line between a 6 and a 7 and an 8, 9 and a 10. A classic example, my wealth advisor, I've made some erroneous decisions in property investing in the past and other challenges, which another day with more time I could share. But one of the things, those decisions where I went wrong was I wasn't asking the right questions of the support network because they weren't proactively engaged with me. I was just a number. I was a name. And recently, the conversation with my wealth guy, we were talking about critical life cover and sort of what to do and whatever. So he, being the professional in that industry, went and researched and came back with 3 quotes, which is what you'd expect. These are good. These are whatever else. And then I put into the mix, well, what about these guys? Because I've got my private health cover with them and there. I got this beautiful email back that said, I know this bloke who says empower and trust your professional support network when they research and come up with ideas and suggestions for you.
Don't you hate having your words quoted back to you?
Yeah. And it was kind of get back in your box. And I thought, yeah, there's a reason why he hadn't gone to any of those because they didn't fit what we were looking at. And it was trust your power, your support, your professionals to ask you better questions, to know more than you do. I don't want to be an accountant. So hence, I'm not trained in that field. I get other people to ask those questions. I'm not trained as a legal. If I was, I wouldn't have bought that property in Cyprus. But we've moved on from that. I've had therapy, I can deal with it. So all of these things. So that's where, when you empower people to ask better questions, and then in the mastermind group, when you've got half a dozen people in confidentiality, challenging each other, and then holding you each person accountable to the actions they say they're going to do between now and the next time you meet, you can't wriggle. You can't get off the hook in that environment. You have to deliver. Otherwise, there's no point in you being in that group, because you're just disrespecting everybody else's advice that you're trying to pretend to seek out, but then you're not acting upon it, which means there's no point in you being there.
So if I've heard you correctly, Mike, what we're talking about in that inner sanctum, that mastermind group that you mentioned, there's almost an implicit contract there that you are here, you are in this inner sanctum because I trust that you will challenge me when needed, that you will challenge me without judgment, but that you've got my back. It's for my best interest. And you talk knowledgeably about whatever this topic is. Is that, you know, that's this
absolutely
unwritten contract.
Yeah. Otherwise, there's no point in them being there. So the clients I work with from the coaching perspective, I turn up with a blank piece of paper. Otherwise, I'm not coaching them. I'm mentoring or I'm consulting or I'm counseling. Yeah, for me, coaching is a blank piece of paper. Right, where are you trying to get to? Here are the 3 strategies that you'd like to investigate. Right, which one are you going to commit to and work through with them as to how they will see it through? If I turn up with an agenda or a set of ingredients or a recipe for what they should do, that's my idea.
Yeah.
Now, you switch that into the professional sector, legal, accountancy, and wealth. I don't have that knowledge, so I have to use other people's cleverness. So I rely on that. In the mastermind group, there are people who've experienced different parts of the world, different cultures, different businesses, different industries, different sectors, and they will have a very varied viewpoint. Now, that's what brings in creativity and left field thinking in what you're trying to achieve. So all the time, you're then growing because you've got people around you that are stretching you. They're pushing your buttons. Yes, they're going to irritate you at times, but that's because they're holding you accountable for the things you said you're going to do. And then you came up with some lame Muppet excuse that, yeah, I didn't get around to it. Well, don't do that.
They don't let you off the hook. Yeah, I like that. That point about varied variety, it goes back to what my friend was talking about. You know, he uses different friends for different reasons because that variety is important. He needs it right now to get that variety. He doesn't need the same viewpoint, the same advice. He needs different advice, different views. So variety is important. We are all too soon down to our last 5 minutes, Mike. I told you this would fly by.
It has, fast.
As ever, we like to kind of talk about actionable points or pieces of advice or stories that might resonate with those listening that they can take away and try out for themselves. And thank you for the exercise earlier. I think that's definitely something that we can all try. But any little top tips, actionable points to close on, Mike?
I give you two things. First one is a simple one. When you have the support network around you that's fit for purpose for the way forward, you will make braver decisions, which enable you to have more fun and enjoyment in what you're doing. So as an outcome of positive mental wealth, you can have more fun. And that's absolutely a target. The second one is directed, but it's related to mental wealth, but it's the focus on being a good human being. And it's a slightly sad story, but bear with me for a second. A year ago, my son, who had a friend of his who fortunately was unsuccessful in a suicide attempt, age 17. The morning after this happened, one of my best mates who lives in America rang me at 11 o'clock in the morning. And I said, before you talk, Bock, just tell me, why have you rung now? And he said, that's not a very sociable way to answer the phone. And I said, no, there's a reason why I'm asking, but I just want to get my head around what's made you ring now. And we spent 5 minutes digging and we couldn't come up with a solution. It was just intuition, gut feel, made him pick up the phone. He was ringing me at 5 a.m. in the morning, US time. He's a doctor, head of A&E at a hospital in Pennsylvania, and he was driving home from the night shift. And he just reached out because in his head, he needed. Clearly, I was then able to ask him all sorts of questions about what had happened with this young man, what they were up against, because what he attempted was very, very unique and different. And he was able to give me all sorts of input, which helped me, helped my wife, helped my son, who was obviously struggling in that environment, the lad's sister, and most importantly as well, the parents of the young man involved. So it was a brilliant interaction that was bespoke, unwritten, unexpected, however you want to dress it up. So my challenge to the listeners now is, as a result of that story and being good human beings, who is it in your world that you haven't spoken to for a while, that your gut feel is saying, I should reach out to, I should make contact? I do not want you to tweet them, text them, high five them, tickle them, whatever it happens to be in whichever social media platform you have. Pick up the phone. If you live local enough, go and see them. You do not know what is going on in somebody else's world. You do not know what you might just prevent, open, ask a better question. They need that certain person there at that time. So my challenge to you is just to get out there and pick up the phone. You may become part of their mental wealth team as a result of it. You may already be part of that. And that's the point. As good human beings, we can make a massive impact. And there's too much work to be done in the world of mental health and well-being, but there's little things that we can do more of, more regularly, and the compound effect and the cumulative effect of that can make a massive difference. So pick up the phone would be my final call.
Thanks, Mike. What a truly fantastic point to end on. You're so right. Never stop caring. Never stop being kind. It's a great Great message. Thank you. For those that want to dig a little bit deeper, they can always find your book, can't they? Mike, Mental Wealth, Unlock Your Potential, Enrich Your Life by Mike Pagan, available all over the place. But thank you so much, Mike. What fascinating insights. Quite rare that we get to unpack perhaps the kind of meaning of friendships and support network. So really appreciate your time and thoughts on that. Thank you.
My pleasure. Lots of fun and time to talk, time to play, and time to enjoy what we're doing with the right people around us.
Bring it on. Thank you so much, Mike. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for listening to the Hokuto Conversation. If you've enjoyed this podcast from our limited series, take a look at our previous episodes and stay tuned for our next ones. We look forward to you joining us on this unique exploratory journey.